Simon & Schuster Audio presents Spy School Goes South, a spy school novel by Stuart Gibbs, read by Gibson Fraser.
In memory of Suzanne, my incredible, wonderful, amazing wife. March 27th, 2017. To Agent Emeritus, Central Intelligence Agency, regarding inmate 62615, a.k.a. As you are certainly aware, our attempts over the past month to get to give up information on Spider have been unsatisfactory. While I have no doubt that knows more than he is letting on, he has been surprisingly effective in his refusal to reveal any of it. The one time he did reveal information, it turned out to be false, leading to last week's regrettable CIA raid on a Boy Scout jamboree. Has remained surprisingly immune to our methods of persuasion, and while there are other things I would like to try, they are all illegal under the Geneva Conventions. After the bad press of raiding the jamboree, the last thing the CIA needs is another lawsuit. Therefore, I am optimistic about the sudden change of attitude shown by this morning. While I share your skepticism about anything concerning the prisoner, I'm not about to look a gift horse in the mouth. Learning anything we can about Spider is the top priority for you and your team. Spider is certainly plotting another diabolical scheme, and they have infiltrated the agency to the point where almost no one can be trusted. At this point, sadly, is the best lead we have to bringing them down once and for all. So cut a deal with the kid. Give him whatever he wants, or at least let him think you're doing that. And if he says he'll only talk to then let him talk to Also, thanks for recommending Dr. Raker. She really took care of those bunions. Sincerely, Director of Information Retrieval. Destroy this memo after reading. Chapter 1. Good Citizenship. Washington, D.C. Streets in proximity to the Academy of Espionage, March 28, 1500 hours.
Stop that man!
Alerted by the cry, I glanced back over my shoulder. Five storefronts away, an extremely tall man with muscles the size of cantaloupes was charging down the sidewalk, clutching a leopard print purse. Behind him, an elderly woman lay sprawled on the ground. My first reaction was to think that it was a test. That might not seem like the correct reaction for a normal 13-year-old boy, but then I wasn't a normal 13-year-old boy. I was a spy in training at the CIA's top-secret Academy of Espionage, and it was standard practice at the school to spring fake emergencies on the students to see how we handled ourselves. This happened surprisingly often. 3 days earlier, I had to defuse a phony bomb and survive an attack by ninjas before I even got to breakfast. These pop quizzes rarely took place off-campus, though. And they usually concerned serious criminals like terrorists or assassins, rather than plain old muggers. But I wasn't completely sure about this.
"Someone, please help!"
the elderly woman cried. Even though the sidewalk was crowded with people, no one was trying to stop the thief. This was somewhat understandable, as the thief was built like a brick wall and looked as mean as a wounded bear. He was bowling over anyone who happened to be in his way. Therefore, people were scrambling to clear a path for him. Trying to stop him would only be asking for trouble. He was now three storefronts away. I glanced at Erica Hale for guidance. Erica was 2 years ahead of me at spy school and by far the most accomplished student. In fact, she was probably more accomplished than most of the teachers. She was a legacy. A descendant of Nathan Hale, whose entire family tree was chock full of secret agents, and she'd been learning the ropes from her relatives since she was old enough to wield a billy club. In addition, she wasn't above springing a sudden sneak attack on me herself. The whole reason we were off campus together was that Erica was giving me extra tutoring and advanced survival techniques. I was only in my second year at the academy, but due to an unusual set of circumstances, I had managed to thwart the plans of Spider, our main enemy, 4 times so far. Spider was a covert organization dedicated to plotting chaos and mayhem for a price, and its operatives were getting rather annoyed at me for thwarting them. Now they wanted me dead. Unfortunately, the CIA wasn't great at adapting to unusual circumstances. School rules specifically stated that, as a second-year student, I wasn't allowed to take classes beyond Self-Preservation 202, even though I could really have used some more advanced training. So Erica had stepped in. She was tutoring me without permission, on her own time. Now, out on the street, watching the incoming criminal, she shook her head. It was a very small shake, almost imperceptible, but I understood both meanings of it. 1, this wasn't a test, it was a real crime. 2, I shouldn't get involved. The biggest problem with being a secret agent was the secret part. Once your cover was blown, there was no getting it back. My own parents didn't even know I was a student in spy school. In fact, the very existence of spy school itself was a secret. There was quite obviously a campus, only a few blocks away, but it was hidden behind a great stone wall and claimed to be St. Smithin's Science Academy for Boys and Girls. Erica was insanely talented at martial arts. She could have flattened the thief in less time than it took most people to tie their shoes. But then she'd have to explain how a 16-year-old girl like her could do such a thing, which would open up a dozen cans of worms. Erica Hale wasn't going to do anything that would jeopardize her potential career as a spy, even if that meant letting some jerk get away with stealing a poor old lady's purse. And she wanted me to know that I ought to do the same. There was only one problem with that. It didn't seem right.
"All my money is in that purse," the old lady wailed, a desperate last-ditch attempt to get some bystander to actually do something.
The thief was almost on top of me, close enough to look me in the eye. It was a look that said he was considering shoving me into the street merely for being within arm's reach. I couldn't beat this guy in a fight. I had the martial arts skills of a box turtle. That was a direct quote from Professor Simon after my latest self-preservation exam. But I did have other talents that could come in handy. For starters, I was extremely good at math. I could do advanced calculations in my head. I never forgot a phone number, and I could instantly work out complicated concepts like trajectories or gravitational forces with relative accuracy. In addition, I was learning to be hyper-aware of my surroundings. This was one of the things Erica had been teaching me. It was much easier to escape an attack by evil assailants when you knew they were coming, as opposed to being caught by surprise. As it was, I had clocked everyone on the sidewalk ahead of me, and thus had registered 1, the heavyset man walking toward me with a bulldog on a 6-foot leash, 2, the waiter wheeling a loaded dessert cart out of the sidewalk cafe just ahead and to my right, 3, the 3 young women dining at an outdoor table at the same cafe. The one closest to me had a triple-decker club sandwich. Erica, who was even more aware of things than I was, hyper-aware, registered that I had registered all of this and shook her head again, more firmly this time, meaning that she really didn't want me to get involved. I did anyway. As the thief bore down on me, I made a show of leaping out of the way, banging into the table with the 3 young women, hard enough to upset their water glasses into their laps. While they were distracted by this, I deftly snatched 2 strips of bacon from the club sandwich and tossed them to the ground at my feet. The bulldog, being a dog, lunged for the bacon, snapping its leash taut right in front of the thief. If I had done this with a smaller dog, such as a toy poodle or a Bichon Frise, my plan wouldn't have worked, but the bulldog was the size and weight of a sack of concrete. When the thief ran into the leash, the bulldog held fast like an anchor. The leash caught the thief at shin height, tripping him and sending him flying. At this point, I gave the dessert cart a small accidental nudge, just enough to knock it from the waiter's grasp and place it directly in the thief's path. The thief landed on it so hard that a Boston cream pie exploded on impact, coating a few nearby diners with custard. The thief himself ended up face first in a double chocolate tort, which caught him by such surprise that he dropped the purse. However, the force with which he landed made the dessert cart roll faster than I'd expected. In the few seconds I'd had to concoct a plan, I hadn't been able to calculate everything. The cart now raced down the sidewalk, which sloped gently downhill, increasing the cart's speed even more. Startled pedestrians scrambled out of the way as it careened past them. The thief, though blinded by chocolate, was still aware that something bad was happening, and he screamed as he hurtled along. The cart gained more and more speed until it slammed into a fire hydrant at the corner and stopped abruptly. Meanwhile, the thief didn't stop. He was large enough to have considerable inertia, and his body was now greased with various mousses and gelatins, so he shot right off the cart and flew through the air. It was only now that I noticed something about my surroundings I had failed to register before. The street beyond the corner was under construction. Several utility workers in bright orange vests were overseeing a project that required three major pieces of construction equipment. A trench had been gouged into the road to allow access to a large sewer pipe, which had been cut open as well. The thief tumbled right through the gap and plunged headfirst into the sewage. He landed with a sickening squelch, which was followed by his cry of abject disgust. Every person around had recorded the entire incident on their phones. However, no one had noticed my involvement. I had been cautious enough to make it look like a freak accident. Erica grabbed my arm and dragged me away before anyone even realized we were there. The waiter picked up the purse and returned it to the old lady, who had struggled back to her feet. Everyone else began to either forward the videos they had recorded to friends or upload them to the internet. It didn't seem to have occurred to anyone that they could use their phones to call the police. Thankfully, the old lady didn't appear to be hurt. In fact, she was laughing so hard at the fate of the thief that her false teeth had come loose. I tried to head toward her just to make sure she was all right, but Erica kept her iron grip locked on my arm and hustled me across the street. "That was an unnecessary risk," she said angrily under her breath. "The man was a criminal," I argued. "We're supposed to stop criminals." "Major criminals," Erica corrected. "International arms dealers. Terrorists. Lunatics determined to cause chaos and mayhem. Not common thieves. That's a job for the police." "I didn't see any police around. And besides, I was subtle about the way I did it." "Subtle? You call sending a man cannonballing down the street on a dessert cart subtle? Why didn't you just trip him?" "I was trying to look like I wasn't involved. You can't trip someone without them noticing." "Of course you can." "No, you can't," I began, though I didn't get to finish the thought because Erica tripped me. At least I thought she did. It happened so fast, I didn't actually notice her doing it. One moment I was arguing with her, the next I was sprawled in a flower bed.
"See?"
Erica asked. Point well made. I got back to my feet, brushing mulch off my shirt. Okay, maybe it wasn't subtle, but it was effective. Sending the man flying into the open sewer was a bit much. I said uncomfortably. "Well," Erica sighed. "Let me guess, you didn't notice the open sewer until it was too late." There didn't seem to be any point in denying it. "Yes. You didn't notice a giant gaping hole in the street with a dozen men in bright orange vests surrounding it? It was almost a block away, and there were other things going on, like a robbery in progress." "There are always going to be other things going on, Ben, but you need to be on the alert at all times. People are trying to kill you." I probably should have been upset by Erica's exasperation with me, but I wasn't. Despite the fact that my life was in constant danger and Erica was berating me for my lack of skills, I couldn't help but feel pleased. because Erica Hale was worried for my safety, which meant she cared about me. In addition to being the most competent spy at school, Erica was also the most beautiful girl I had ever met. She had hypnotic eyes, lustrous hair, and the intoxicating scent of lilacs and gunpowder. Plus, she could beat a man twice her size senseless. However, Erica generally didn't like other people. Until recently, she had considered having any friends at all a liability. This had earned her the nickname Ice Queen at school. But over the past year, I had earned her respect, and, even more importantly, her affection, or the closest to affection that Erica could allow herself. She wasn't willing to go on a date, or even consider the idea of being my girlfriend, but she had once kissed me when we thought we were going to be vaporized by a nuclear bomb, and now she was teaching me to survive, rather than leaving me to the wolves. However, she still had some work to do where basic social skills were concerned. "Why are you smiling?" she asked me. "Am I smiling?" I asked, then realized that I was, given how thrilled I was that Erica cared about my safety. "Sorry, I'll stop." "Good. This is serious stuff." Erica still hadn't released her vice grip on my arm. She hooked me around a corner, aiming me back toward campus. "You already have enough problems with Spider being after you. If you pull another stunt like that and get outed as a spy, the CIA will cut you loose, and then no one will be able to protect you anymore." "You will," I said. "No, I won't. It'll be against the rules." "You'll still do it, because any attempt Spider makes on me will be a lead to Spider." "You're smiling again," Erica said, which was true. However, Erica was also dodging the subject. Even though we had thwarted Spider 4 times, we still didn't know much about them, and neither did anyone else at the CIA. In fact, until a year before, no one at the CIA had known that Spider even existed. We didn't know who ran the organization or where they were holed up. We didn't know how many moles they had in the government or who they might be. And we didn't have the slightest idea what they were plotting next. The few slim leads we'd found had come up dry. Until that very moment. Erica's phone buzzed in her pocket. This struck me as odd, because only 3 people on Earth knew Erica's phone number. Her grandfather, who was a very good spy for the CIA, her mother, who was a very good spy for MI6, so good that even Erica's grandfather didn't know about her, and me. Even then, Erica had only given me her number grudgingly, insisting that it was exclusively for life-and-death emergencies. Her own father, who was also a spy, didn't even have it. This was because Alexander Hale was a lousy spy, although he had been clever enough to hide this from most of the CIA until recently. Erica seemed moderately concerned that anyone was calling her. She pulled out the phone, checked the caller ID, then answered curtly, "What's the situation?" She listened for a few seconds, then said, "I'm with him now. I'll bring him right in." Then she hung up and said, "Granddad wants to see you. Immediately." "Why?" "Murray Hill says he's finally ready to talk." That caught me by surprise. Murray Hill was only a year older than me, but he was one of Spider's most devious operatives. He had been a mole at spy school for months and nearly succeeded in blowing the place up. Since then, he'd been caught and had escaped several times. For the past month, he'd been incarcerated at spy school, during which he had steadfastly refused to say anything he knew about Spider, no matter how much he was offered in return. "Why is he ready to talk now?" I asked. "Granddad didn't know. He said Murray just decided to do it." "And what's this got to do with me?" Erica rolled her eyes, the way she always did when I wasn't putting things together fast enough. "Isn't it obvious? You're the only one he'll talk to." Chapter 2. Negotiation. Sessions Center for Juvenile Incarceration, CIA Academy of Espionage, Subterranean Level 2, March 28, 1600 hours. Murray Hill was locked up in the Academy's relatively new jail for students, which had been built inside the Cheney Center for the Acquisition of Information. The reason the jail was relatively new was that, until recently, no one had believed there was any need for it. Everyone had felt that even if a kid under 18 had been devious enough to commit a serious crime against the country, then a standard juvenile detention center would have been good enough to hold them. That hadn't been the case with Murray Hill. Spider had sprung him from state custody twice. Therefore, the academy jail had been built, although Murray wasn't one of the original prisoners. He had still been at large at the time. The originals had been two students from Spider's training center for future evil agents, Nefarious Jones, who was still imprisoned, and Ashley Sparks, who had escaped. The new jail also served as a school, providing Nefarious and Murray with classes specifically tailored for them, such as Why You Should Defect from Spider and Help Us Defeat Them, and Informing on the Enemy 101. I hadn't seen Murray since he had been incarcerated, but I'd heard through the grapevine that the classes weren't working. This was quickly confirmed by Cyrus Hale, Erica's grandfather, as he led Erica and me through the center.
The little dirtbag hasn't said one useful thing the whole time he's been here, Cyrus groused, no matter what we've tried.
Even torture? Erica asked.
The CIA isn't allowed to use torture anymore, Cyrus replied testily, like this was a bad thing.
Cyrus was a talented spy, but, like Erica, he wasn't much of a people person. He was gruff and curt on a good day, and this obviously wasn't a good day.
But then, there are plenty of other approved techniques. We're not exactly making the kid comfortable down there.
So what are you doing? I asked.
Standard procedure for prisoners who refuse to cooperate. Reduced sleeping hours, no TV or any other perks, only vitamin-enhanced gruel and water to eat.
No junk food? I asked. Murray's the least healthy person I've ever met. I'm pretty sure he's never eaten a vegetable unless it was garnishing a hamburger. Without junk food, I'm surprised he lasted a day without saying anything, let alone a month.
Oh, he said plenty, Cyrus muttered. The kid never shuts up for a second. Problem is, none of it's useful. It's all just hot air and banana oil.
We arrived at a door flanked by two guards. Both snapped to attention when they saw Cyrus, but glanced at Erica and me warily.
They're with me, Cyrus said.
The guards obediently stepped aside. One entered a code into a keypad, and the door clicked open. Cyrus led us through it into the incarceration area. The two cells sat side by side with a narrow corridor for us to stand in. Nefarious Jones was in the first cell, just as he'd been the last time I'd visited. In fact, Nefarious was in the exact same spot where I'd last seen him. He was seated on his cot, facing the large-screen TV that had been a reward for his turning in evidence against Spider. He was playing video games, as usual, surrounded by a dozen empty bags of Cheetos. Now that I thought about it, Nefarious ate even worse than Murray. Cheetos were his primary food source, and possibly his only one. The area around his mouth was bright orange from Cheeto dust. He looked like he had a radioactive goatee.
Hey, Nefarious, I said. How's it going?
Nefarious replied, which was actually rather communicative for Nefarious. He simply ignored most people.
Is that Ben Ripley?
Murray Hill called from the next cell over.
Don't waste your time talking to that gamer freak. You might as well talk to a turnip. Come on over and say hello.
I continued down the corridor and stopped in shock before Murray's cell. Erica did too, and Erica wasn't easily shocked. Murray looked like an entirely different person. The whole time I'd known him, he'd been an out-of-shape slob. He had a pot belly, a permanent slouch, and the stamina of a koala bear. His hair was oily, his skin was greasy, and his clothes were usually so covered with food stains that they looked like Jackson Pollock paintings. But now, Murray was trim, fit, and a good 20 pounds lighter. His hair was cut short and even appeared to have been washed in the past day, revealing eyes that were much brighter than I remembered. His belly was now flat as a tabletop, and he had muscles. They weren't huge, but still they were on display as Murray was doing push-ups. Murray Hill, who had always acted as though the simple act of sitting up straight was exhausting, was exercising.
"Erica," he exclaimed upon seeing her. "Glad to see you're here, too. Not that I would have expected you to let Ben visit solo. I mean, big things are about to happen, and I know you want to be a part of them."
He sprang to his feet in a smooth and distinctly un-Murray-like movement, then began doing jumping jacks. "Hello, Murray," Erica said. She was trying to speak with her usual reserved cool, but she was obviously still caught off guard. Murray picked up on this, too.
"Checking out my new bod? Well, not new, I guess. Technically, it's the same body I've always had, but now it's been tuned up, courtesy of the CIA.
He grinned at Cyrus.
"I've been meaning to thank you, Agent Hale. I'll admit, for the first day or two, after you locked me down here with nothing to eat but pig slop and absolute zero in terms of mental stimulation, I was not a happy camper, which I suppose was the point. But after a while, I realized that moping around feeling sorry for myself wasn't going to get me anywhere. So I decided to make the best of my situation. I asked the guards for some exercise tips and started working out. And I have to tell you, this has been an incredible month. As your granddaughter noticed, I'm in the peak physical condition of my life. My skin is cleared up. I feel fantastic. And mentally, I'm even better."
He returned his attention to Erica and me.
"I've taken up yoga, mindfulness, and tantric meditation. It's amazing. I feel like I've really gotten in touch with the real me."
"The real you is a backstabbing sleazeball," I said.
"The old me was a backstabbing sleazeball," Murray corrected. "Also a money-grubbing jerk and an all-around schmuck. But I've changed. I know you won't believe this, but I am truly sorry for my behavior."
"I don't believe it," Erica and I said simultaneously.
"I deserve that," Murray said, sounding genuinely upset. "But it doesn't change the fact that I am sorry. The way I behaved to you both was very bad."
"You tried to kill us," I pointed out, "on multiple occasions."
"Okay, the way I behaved was worse than very bad. It was terrible, horrible."
"Reprehensible," Erica suggested. "Repugnant, odious, loathsome, abhorrent, subhuman."
"Those two," Marie agreed. "My experience here has allowed me to realize that. I put my own well-being ahead of yours, and while that seemed like a good idea at the time, it wasn't very smart from a karmic perspective. So, I want to atone. I want to do something good for both of you to make up for all the awful things I've done."
He stopped his jumping jacks and gave us a big grin, revealing the gold tooth that had replaced one of his front incisors.
"What if I gave you Spider? For real this time?"
I took a step back, stunned. Then I looked at Erica, unsure what to believe. She looked at her grandfather in turn. If Cyrus was caught by surprise, he didn't show it. Instead, he gave Erica a slight nod, indicating he thought this might be on the level.
"How?"
Erica asked Murray.
"I'll put the whole organization in a box, stick a bow on it, and then leave it under your Christmas tree," Murray said sarcastically. "How do you think I'll give it to you? I'll take you to where everyone who runs Spider is hiding out."
My astonishment grew even greater. I had been expecting Murray to give us a few names at most, and here he was offering to hand over the entire organization. Cyrus immediately became skeptical.
"For the past month, you've told the Inquisitors you didn't have the slightest idea where Spider was holed up. And now, just like that, you've changed your mind?"
"First of all, the Inquisitors never ask nicely," Murray said. "Secondly, I have seen the error of my ways, and I can prove it with two words. Adam Zarembok."
Cyrus blinked at him, confused.
"Who's Adam Zarembok?"
"He's a sixth-year student here," Erica replied. "Weak on self-defense, but otherwise scores top marks all around. Well-respected, president of his class, has a work-study job with the school administration."
"He's also a mole for Spider," Murray said, "and has been for the past 2 years. If you toss his room, you'll find a trove of top-secret documents he's stolen from the school."
Cyrus looked to Erica. "Is he on your radar?"
"No," Erica admitted, "but you might as well check it out."
Cyrus strode to the door and told the guard stationed there, "Get a team to Zarembok's room right now and search it thoroughly. If you find anything suspicious, call me." One guard saluted and hustled off, leaving the second on duty. Meanwhile, Murray grabbed a pipe that hung from the ceiling and began doing chin-ups.
"It's not a question of if he finds anything. It's when. Zarembok's dirty, just like I used to be. And he's only a little fish. I'm offering you the whole organization."
Cyrus returned from the door. His skepticism had faded significantly. "You're really willing to take us to your leaders?"
"Not you."
Since his hands were occupied, Murray pointed to Erica and me with his feet.
"Them. And only them. No one else from the CIA comes along. That's the deal. Take it or leave it."
"I can't send two kids to face Spider, and you know it," Cyrus said.
"Well, I can't bring a whole brigade of CIA agents," Murray returned, "and you know that. This needs to be a stealth operation, not the D-Day invasion. Plus, the CIA is crawling with double agents. If you alert too many people, one of those scumbags will tip Spider off before we even get out the door. Now, if the dynamic duo here wants to call in the cavalry after I've shown them where Spider is, that's up to them."
He looked toward Erica and me.
"However you crazy kids want to handle this is your business."
"Why us?" I asked. Murray paused in the midst of a chin-up to look at me curiously.
"What do you mean?"
"If you really want to bring Spider down, why not take two pros?" I clarified. "Like Agent Hale here and whoever he wants to bring along."
"Because I don't like Agent Hale here, and I'm sure I'd like whoever he wants to bring along even less."
Murray dropped to the floor and approached the bars of his cell. After his chin-ups, his newfound muscles were bulging.
"But I like you, Ben. Before you knew I was working for the bad guys, we were friends."
He shifted his attention to Erica.
"As for you, I have to admit, I always respected you. You might have treated me like pond scum, but I deserved it. I did you guys wrong, so you're the ones I'm looking out for now."
"Both of us?" Erica asked skeptically. "I heard you only wanted to speak to Ben."
"I wanted to speak to both of you," Marie insisted, "but I knew Ben wouldn't be allowed to see me unless I demanded it. Furthermore, I know Ben won't agree to go on any mission without you. You're a team, a good one, possibly the best at the CIA, even if the CIA won't admit it. That's about to change, though. I'll help bring Spider down, but I want both of you to get the credit for it, not anyone else."
I glanced at Erica, expecting her to say something like, "It doesn't matter who gets the credit for bringing down Spider. All that matters is bringing Spider down." But she didn't say anything like that. She didn't say anything, period. She just gave Murray a hard stare. Only there was a tiny glint of excitement in it. Murray had struck a nerve with her, and he knew it. He leaned against the bars now, selling his plan.
"Both of you have helped thwart Spider four times now. And how much credit has the CIA given you? Zip. Nada. The big old goose egg. The first time your own daddy stole the credit, Erica. The next three, they kept everything a secret and swept your contributions under the carpet."
He shifted his attention to me.
"Yeah, you got a medal from the president last time, but that was only public relations. The CIA had to cover its butt after letting you take the fall for blowing up the White House. And even then, you only got credit for saving the president, not thwarting Spider."
His eyes flicked back to Erica.
"Which is still more credit than you got, hot stuff. As smart as Ben is, he would have been dead 10 times over without your mad skills. You've bailed him out of trouble time and time again. And for what? You know more than most teachers here, and they still only consider you a spy in training. Well, once you give them Spider on a silver platter, that won't be the case anymore. So what do you say? Are we a team?"
Erica said, "I'm not committing to anything until I know how this plan of yours works."
"It's simple. The CIA has lots of aircraft at its disposal, right? All we need is a small private jet, one capable of traveling a few thousand miles, and with an in-flight entertainment system of some sort, because I've had nothing to watch except mold growing on cinder blocks for the past month, and that storyline has gotten very boring. You guys covertly spring me from this lockup, the three of us fly to where Spider is hiding out, I point them out to you, and you take it from there. Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Not exactly, Cyrus grumbled. I'm guessing this plan of yours doesn't entail your making a round trip back here.
Murray acted surprised, as if this hadn't even occurred to him.
Now that you mention it, Agent Hale, it does seem like my freedom might be a nice reward for helping engineer the capture of the most ruthless and cunning group of enemies this country has ever had.
No dice, Cyrus said. You've committed too many crimes to walk.
Murray shrugged.
Fine, be that way. Good luck finding Spider on your own.
He dropped to the floor and started doing push-ups again.
We're done here, Cyrus told Erica and me, then walked out of the incarceration area.
Erica and I hurried after him. Nefarious didn't even glance at us as we passed his cell. He was still riveted to his video game.
Nice seeing you guys, Murray called out cheerfully. Feel free to stop by again next time you're in the neighborhood.
We caught up to Cyrus in the hall outside the cell block.
What do you think you're doing?
Erica asked him.
Putting the kibosh on this.
Cyrus kept walking at a fast clip through the Cheney Center. For a man in his 70s, he was in excellent shape.
That kid has committed serious crimes against this country. I'm not about to let him go free.
He's offering us Spider, Erica said heatedly. Not just the low-level schmoes we've caught before, the people who run the organization. If we get them, then Spider dies once and for all. And all the chaos and mayhem they cause ends too.
If they're not 10 steps ahead of us, as usual, Cyrus muttered. I'm not sending you into the lion's den with only Ben as backup. The kid might be smart, but he has the survival skills of a potato bug.
I said, I'm right here.
We won't do anything on our own, Erica said. We'll simply confirm Spider's location, radio it back to you, and keep a close eye on them while you bring in the big guns.
It won't be that simple, Cyrus warned. Things never are with Spider.
It's a babysitting operation. I can handle it, Grandpa, and you know it.
Cyrus scratched the stubble on his chin, mulling this over. I knew that, despite his concern for Erica, he valued her skills more highly than most other spies at the agency. After all, he was the one who'd taught them to her.
I still don't like the idea of that weasel in there getting a get-out-of-jail-free card.
So we don't free him, Erica said with a smile. We tell him we will, but then we sack him with the rest of Spider.
Do you want to go back on your word with him? I asked.
It's exactly what he'd do to us, Erica replied. In fact, he has done it to us, too many times to count.
What's to say he isn't double-crossing us now? I asked. What if this whole thing is a setup?
It's possible, Cyrus conceded. Let's see how this Adams-Rembach thing shakes out. If Murray is really willing to expose a mole Spider has spent years developing, then I'd say he's definitely turned against them. In fact, he'll need us to take Spider down, because once they find out he's fingered someone, they'll want him dead.
We passed out of the Cheney Center and into the maze of subterranean tunnels beneath the academy. The entire network was designed to be as confusing as possible. There was no signage, and all the exits were cleverly concealed. However, Cyrus moved through it without hesitation. He and Erica were probably the only people who knew their way around it without a map. Our own principal had once been lost down there for 2 days.
So if Murray has really turned, this mission is a go? Erica asked.
Cyrus fixed Erica with a stony gaze as we walked.
Tell me you're not only doing this for the credit, he said. I saw that look on your face when that snake oil salesman gave you his spiel. I know the CIA hasn't given you what you deserve, but you can't get into this game looking for glory. Once you start putting yourself ahead of the mission, things go south fast. If you need any evidence, look at your father.
It's not about the credit, Erica assured him.
It's about getting Spider. That's it.
Cyrus considered Erica a little longer, then nodded.
All right. If Zarembok is really a mole, you're on. We'll let Murray sweat it out in there another couple hours, though. Make him think we really have nixed this thing. Then we cut a deal on our terms and send you guys in.
Great, Erica said. We won't let you down, Grandpa.
I said. Cyrus and Erica both turned to me, looking as though they had forgotten I was with them.
You have a problem with this? Cyrus asked.
No, I said. I have many problems with it.
Cyrus glared at me. Erica didn't look much happier. I soldiered on anyhow. For starters, neither of you asked me if I wanted to do this.
That's not how spying works, Cyrus informed me. You get your mission and you see it through. End of story.
I understand that in theory, I said, but I've gone up against spiders several times before, and things have never worked out the way we hoped.
And yet we've always thwarted them,
Erica said impatiently.
Yes, I conceded, but before that happens, there's always been an awful lot of me almost dying, which I have never enjoyed. And now you and I will be confronting Spider alone, with Murray Hill, who's as slippery as they come. It sounds awfully dangerous.
This is the Academy of Espionage, Cyrus said gruffly. If you didn't want danger, you should have enrolled at the Academy of Scrapbooking. Any other problems?
Yes, I said. I'm worried that people might recognize me. 6 weeks ago, I was the most wanted kid in America for trying to assassinate the president.
You just came here from walking around in public, didn't you? Cyrus asked. Did anyone recognize you?
No, I admitted.
How many people have recognized you in the last month?
I thought about that, then gave my answer.
None.
Exactly as suspected, Cyrus said. People have terrible memories. Most can barely recognize someone they've met a dozen times, let alone someone who was famous for 15 minutes a month and a half ago. The chances of you being noticed are minuscule at best, especially because you're going to be trying your best to not even be seen in the first place. The whole point of this mission is to lie low. Now, if there are no other issues...
Actually, there's one more, I said weakly. It's spring break next week. I'm supposed to go home to see my parents.
Not anymore, Cyrus informed me. If we want to get the jump on Spider, we can't waste any time. So call your parents and let them know that plans have changed. You have a big science project, and you're going to need the whole week to finish it.
They won't be happy about that, I said.
I'm sure they won't, Cyrus agreed. But the fate of the free world is at stake here. We can't put it on hold so you can spend the week with your mommy. Your spring break is now officially Operation Tiger Shark.
Tiger Shark? Erica asked, impressed. I thought the CIA had run out of cool names like that. This was true. The CIA had been naming operations for several decades, and the good options were running low. Our last mission had been dubbed Pungent Muskrat.
I made an executive decision, Cyrus replied. I'm not initiating ops with names like Mangy Weasel or Scrawny Chicken anymore. It's bad for morale. So I recycled an old mission name. Now go get packing. I want you moving out at 0200.
That's 2 in the morning, I exclaimed.
I know when 0200 is, Cyrus snapped. The best way to catch your enemy by surprise is to get to them before they've even had their morning coffee. I'll put everything in motion immediately.
With that, he spun on his heel and marched down the hall.
But we don't even know where our enemy is yet, I said to Erica.
We will soon enough. Erica's eyes were wide with excitement. Come on, let's get to the armory.
She started down the hall in the opposite direction her grandfather had gone. I stayed rooted to my spot. Erica turned back to me. At first she seemed to be annoyed, the way she would have been back when we'd first met, but then she seemed to think better of it. She shifted to a tone of concern.
Ben, I know we've ended up in danger every time we've gone up against Spider, but this mission is different. It's easy. We're only keeping an eye on Spider, not confronting them. They won't even know we're there.
And what if something goes wrong? Something always goes wrong.
Not this time, I promise. This is as simple as missions get.
I wasn't sure if Erica was saying this because she truly meant it or because she knew it would make me feel better to hear it. I hoped it was the former, though. After all, Erica liked me, which hopefully meant she wouldn't lie to me. However, I knew she wanted to bring Spider down more than anything. It wasn't merely about the credit, it was also personal. Joshua Halal, the last spy school student Erica had liked, had betrayed her and defected to the dark side. He was certainly one of the higher-ups Murray was promising to hand over to us. And yet, while Murray might have respected Erica, he certainly didn't consider her a friend. If I didn't agree to go on the mission, Murray would probably kill it. So it was definitely possible that Erica was only sweet-talking me. Still, I fell in behind her and followed her through the tunnels, partly because I really wanted to trust her intentions, and partly because, without her help, I probably wouldn't be able to find my way out again. It was a real labyrinth down there.
"I know you're worried," Erica said, "but this won't turn out as badly as you fear. In fact, it might even be fun."
I realized that might be true. If the mission really did turn out to be easy, then going away with Erica for a few days could be enjoyable. Maybe even romantic. I found myself smiling at the thought of it.
"Yeah, I suppose it could."
"Then let's start packing." Erica led the way through the tunnels toward the armory. I fell in beside her, growing more and more excited about the mission, which was a mistake. As it happened, Erica was right about one thing. The mission didn't turn out as badly as I had feared. It turned out far worse than I could have ever imagined.
Chapter 3. Dilemma. CIA Academy of Espionage, Armistead Dormitory, March 28, 2015 hours.
"I have a problem," Mike Brzezinski said. "A big one."
"Join the club," I told him.
"You don't understand," Mike said. "This problem is huge, bigger than anything you could possibly be dealing with right now."
He was standing in the doorway to my cramped dormitory room, wearing his customary shorts and t-shirt combo.
"Wasn't that door locked?" I asked.
"Yes, but I picked it."
"Why?"
"I didn't think you would answer if I knocked."
Mike pointed to the "Do Not Disturb" sign I'd taped to the door as evidence.
"See? You apparently don't want to be disturbed."
"I don't," I agreed. "I'm in the middle of something very urgent here."
I was packing for my mission. Adam Zarembach had turned out to be a mole. Campus security had found 36 highly classified documents hidden in his room. They hadn't busted him, though, as that would have tipped off Spider that something was wrong. But this had convinced Cyrus that Murray had truly turned. Only 2 minutes before, I had received a coded text from him.
"Tiger Shark approved and initiated. Be ready at 0200. Murray Hill says dress for warm weather."
My knapsack was laid out on my spindly bed. It didn't seem right to take a suitcase on a mission. I had to be prepared for any eventuality, and the knapsack was far more versatile. Luckily, I had only placed a few shorts and t-shirts in it so far, and not the cache of survival gear that Erica and I had procured from the school armory. I had quickly covered it all with my bedsheets when I'd heard Mike picking the lock. Mike closed the door and plopped himself into my desk chair. Either he was ignoring me, or he was too wrapped up in his own problem to have heard what I'd said.
"It's Gemma," he groaned.
"Your girlfriend?" I asked.
"She's not my girlfriend," Mike said quickly. "She's just a girl who's a friend."
"The national news seems to think you're her boyfriend," I told him, then added, "and so does Gemma, I think."
"That's the big problem."
Mike was my best friend from growing up. I had been recruited to spy school first and done my best to keep it a secret from him, but Mike had eventually caught on and then proved he was potential spy material as well, so he'd been recruited too, although he'd had to start a year behind me. Mike was the kind of guy who breezed through life. Back in regular school, he had never really challenged himself, only taking classes he knew he could pass. Spy school had been tougher,
but he was still doing fine, mostly because Mike tended to think rules were only for other people, which was an attitude that served him very well at the academy. At spy school, you could sometimes ace a test simply by coming up with a clever enough way to avoid taking it in the first place. Gemma was Gemma Stern, the daughter of the President of the United States of America. She had noticed Mike at my medal ceremony, and I'd made an introduction. The two of them had been hanging out ever since. Up until that point, though, I had thought Mike was enjoying his time with Gemma. Two nights before, he'd been her date to a huge gala at the White House and ended up meeting his favorite comedian and the quarterback for the Washington Redskins. "Gemma wants me to go to Hawaii with her family for spring break," Mike groaned. "That sounds terrible," I said sarcastically. "No wonder you're so upset. And you'll probably have to fly on Air Force One instead of a regular plane."
"It is terrible," Mike insisted.
"A girl doesn't invite a guy to Hawaii unless she's serious, and I don't want to be serious with Gemma." "So tell her you're not that into her."
"It's not easy. She's the first daughter. You can't just break up with the first daughter."
"Why not?"
"Because she's famous. She's America's sweetheart. She has 100 million Twitter followers. I just found out we might be in People magazine next week. If I break her heart, I'll become the most hated person in the country."
I hadn't thought of that. "Oh, that is a problem."
"Plus, her father controls the Secret Service. He already isn't a fan of mine. If I really upset Gemma, he might have them whack me."
"I don't think the Secret Service does that for the president."
"Oh, yeah? How many ex-boyfriends of first daughters have you ever heard about?"
Mike put his head in his hands.
"This is a real dilemma, Ben."
"Yes. A Gemma dilemma." I glanced at my watch. Although I felt bad for Mike, I really needed to get him out of my room and finish packing.
"I don't want to go to Hawaii," he said. "I mean, I do, especially on Air Force One. But once that happens, everyone's going to think we're a thing, especially Gemma, and then I'll never be able to get out of this alive."
"So come up with an excuse," I said. "One that doesn't sound like you're breaking up with her. Like you have to go to a family reunion or something."
"That'll never work. I already told her everyone in my family hates each other."
"I'm sure you can come up with something else." Mike lifted his head from his hands, looking at me suspiciously.
"Why are you trying to get rid of me?"
"I'm not trying to get rid of you," I said, though I'd probably hesitated a moment too long before saying it. Mike had caught me off guard. His eyes flicked to my knapsack.
"What are you packing for?"
"My week at home." Mike sprang to his feet and snatched a pair of shorts out of the knapsack.
"These are shorts. It's only supposed to be 40 degrees in Virginia this week."
"I'm hoping it warms up," I said quickly, "and I still have pants at home." Mike snatched a tube of sunblock out of the knapsack as well.
"Aha! Sunblock! No one takes sunblock to Virginia in March. You're going on a secret mission, aren't you?"
"No.
That's exactly what I'd expect someone who is going on a secret mission to say."
"As well as someone who wasn't going on a secret mission, which I'm not doing, because I'm going home to see my parents." I defiantly removed a pair of jeans from my dresser and threw them into the knapsack. "See? Pants."
"Where are you going?" Mike asked. "Does it have something to do with Spider?"
"It couldn't have less to do with Spider. I'm going to be helping my parents at the grocery store." Mike dramatically yanked back the covers on my bed, revealing the cache of supplies. Then he grinned knowingly at me.
"Exactly what do you need a grappling hook for at a grocery store?"
"Some of the stuff on the top shelves is very hard to reach," I said. But I couldn't sell it. Mike had me figured out, and I had always hated lying to my friends. It was my least favorite thing about being a spy. After the nearly being killed by my enemies, of course.
"What's the mission?" Mike asked. "Can I come?"
"No."
"Oh, come on. I'm your best friend. Take me with you."
"That's not how these things work. I don't get to invite whoever I want. It's a top secret mission, not a birthday party." The door to my room suddenly flew open, revealing Zoe Zabel.
"You're going on a secret mission?" she asked excitedly.
Zoe had been my best friend at spy school until Mike had been recruited. From the moment I met her, she had been my biggest supporter, believing that I had what it took to be a great spy, even when I hadn't believed it myself. Unfortunately, our relationship had grown awkward since I had discovered that she'd had a secret crush on me. Even worse, our fellow student Warren Reeves had had a secret crush on Zoe. Warren had been so upset with my stealing her attention from him that he'd defected to Spider and nearly gotten me killed. Zoe and I really hadn't dealt with this since it had happened. Both of us had been too embarrassed, but avoiding the subject had only made things worse. Things had been weird between us for the last few weeks. "Doesn't anyone knock anymore?" I asked, "or pay attention to do not disturb signs?"
"I wasn't eavesdropping," Zoe said. "I swear. I merely happened to be passing by when I overheard you. The walls in this dorm are paper thin."
"So you decided to pick the lock?" I asked accusingly. "Actually, that's my bad," Mike owned. "I didn't lock the door after I picked it."
"Are you going after Spider?" Zoe asked me excitedly. "Can I come?"
"No." I went to the doorway, peered into the hall to see if any other fellow students were eavesdropping, then locked the door and lowered my voice to a whisper.
"You're not even supposed to know about this mission, let alone be invited to tag along."
Zoe frowned angrily.
"I thought we were friends." "We are. Friends don't go on missions without telling each other about it."
"They do if they're secret missions," I said. "If you got sent on a secret mission, you wouldn't be allowed to tell me, and I wouldn't take it personally."
"Yeah, right." Mike dug into the box of survival gear. "Wow. Night vision goggles, telephoto scope, camo face paint. Looks like someone's doing some surveillance."
Zoe peered into the box as well and grabbed a pack of gum.
"Cool. Is this putty explosive that's designed to look like gum?"
"No," I said. "That's actual gum."
"Mint gum," Mike said suspiciously. "So you're thinking about keeping your breath fresh. Erica must be going."
Zoe glowered jealously, then tried to hide it.
"She's not," I lied. "Of course she is," Zoe said flatly. "Anytime you go on a mission, Erica goes too. You two are the Wonder Twins. You get to go off and have all these amazing adventures while the rest of us are stuck back here doing homework."
"Adventures where people try to kill me on a regular basis," I reminded her. "And you've been able to come on some of them."
"Only as backup," Zoe muttered. "You and Erica always get to be the principals. No one ever frames me for the assassination of the president, or forces me to defuse a nuclear bomb while hanging from a helicopter."
"Most people would consider that a good thing," I said.
"Well, I don't," Zoe huffed. "I'm a straight-A student here. I've proved myself on missions, and I have way better fighting skills than you do."
"There are slime molds with better fighting skills than Ben," Mike put in.
"But you're the one who always gets the missions," Zoe told me petulantly. "I never get to have any fun."
I signaled her to lower her voice before the entire dormitory heard about the mission.
"I wish I could take you," I whispered, "but it's not my call."
"Then put in a good word for us," Mike suggested. "Who's running this op? Cyrus?"
"No," I said too quickly.
"It's definitely Cyrus," Zoe said. "Yes, ask him. He likes you."
"Cyrus doesn't like anybody," I said.
"He likes Erica," Mike offered. "So ask her to ask him about us. Zoe and I have been with him before. We did good work. We kept all of Colorado from getting nuked. That has to be worth something."
"I can try," I told them, "but I don't think it's going to get us anywhere. This mission is supposed to be pretty bare bones."
"Please," Zoe pleaded. "You know we'd be helpful, right?"
"I do." I truly meant that. Despite my previous success on missions, I still felt as though Zoe and Mike had far better talents than I did in many areas. They might not have been as incredibly adept as Erica, but they would still have been a welcome addition as far as I was concerned. 4 spies seemed far better than 2. And yet, it's still going to be a long shot.
"Thanks," Mike said. "I mean, if I had a mission, that'd be the perfect excuse for getting out of going to Hawaii with Gemma. She couldn't get upset at me if the fate of the free world was at stake."
"Hold on," Zoe said.
Are you asking to go on a top-secret mission solely to get out of breaking up with Gemma?
Kind of, Mike admitted.
He's having a Gemma dilemma, I explained. Why don't you just be a man and break up with her? Zoe asked Mike, which gave me the impression that Mike might have told Zoe a lot more about Gemma than he'd told me. The idea that my two best friends were bonding behind my back made me a little jealous. But then, I'd had a lot going on lately.
It's not that easy, Mike protested, but I'm working on ways to do it. Ones that will still let me look like a pretty good person. Like maybe faking my own death.
Mike, Zoe gasped, you can't do that.
Sure I could. It wouldn't even be that hard. If I go on the mission, then we could say that something went wrong and I was killed in action.
There are three problems with that, Zoe pointed out. First of all, it's idiotic. Second, it's a horrible thing to do. And third, Gemma isn't even supposed to know that you're a spy. She thinks this is a science academy.
Crud, Mike grumbled. You're right. Then he brightened suddenly. Maybe I could die in a tragic science experiment.
No, Zoe said so forcefully that Mike shrank away from her. Guys, I said, I'm sorry, but I really need some time to pack. And if you want me to see about getting you on the mission, then I'd better do it right away, so that you have time to pack. We're leaving at 0200. Mike and Zoe were so excited by this prospect, they practically sprang for the door.
Sure thing,
Mike told me. Thanks for doing this, Zoe said. I really appreciate it. Sorry I got upset at you earlier. No worries, I told her, following them out the door. I'll go talk to Erica and let you know what Cyrus says. They thanked me again and hurried off to their own rooms, whispering excitedly to each other. I quickly set off in the other direction, heading for Erica's room. I was quite sure I was on a fool's errand, but I figured it couldn't hurt to try. I took the stairs down a floor, cut through a small common area where a few fellow students were doing homework, and approached Erica's room. Instead of my simple "Do Not Disturb" sign, Erica had dozens of threats posted on her door. Most promised bodily harm to anyone who bothered her. I was considering whether or not to risk knocking when the door opened anyhow. Erica had apparently known I was standing there. She yanked me into a room, cased the hall to see if anyone was watching, then shut the door and locked it. It hadn't occurred to me until that moment that I had never been in Erica's room. I doubted anyone else had either. Erica wasn't much for socializing. What I saw astonished me. It looked completely normal. I had been expecting walls lined with weaponry, or cold, bare walls that concealed secret rooms with walls lined with weaponry. I had not expected posters with kittens on them, or a baby blue comforter on the bed, or a plethora of throw pillows. Erica noticed the stunned look on my face. What's wrong with you?
Nothing,
I said quickly. I just didn't think that, I was human.
Or that's not quite what I like kittens, okay? And throw pillows.
Is that a teapot? I asked, stunned. The one I was staring at was porcelain, and it had delicate paintings of flowers on it.
I'm half British, Erica said curtly. Liking tea is genetic.
Also, the pot is very good for brewing antidotes for poison, in case I've ingested too much.
Too much? Don't you mean any?
No, Erica said, like I was an idiot. You have to ingest some poison if you want to build up an immunity to it.
Oh, of course.
You do that, right? In case Spider ever tries to poison you, you need to be prepared.
I'm working on it, I lied. Listen, before we go, I have a question for you.
The answer's no.
You don't even know what the question is.
Is it, can Mike and Zoe come with us on the mission?
Okay, I said. You do know what the question is. How'd you do that?
I'm studying to be a spy, Ben. It's my job to know things.
Do you have my room bugged?
We don't have time for this, Erica said, which was a dodge rather than an answer. Murray set the parameters for this mission. Only you and I are going. That's it. That's what Grandpa sold to the CIA, and it's too late to make changes now. Plus, Mike and Zoe aren't strong enough agents yet. They'll make this mission more dangerous rather than less.
So will I.
True, but Murray requested you personally, so you're going. And your friends aren't. End of story. Now go get packed.
I sighed in defeat and turned back to the door, knowing any further arguments would be completely ineffectual.
All right. Oh, and Ben?
Yes?
If you tell anyone about the kitten posters or the throw pillows or the teapot, I'll kill you.
I figured as much. I exited into the hallway and heard Erica triple bolt the door behind me.
In only a few hours, I was going to begin a dangerous mission to confront people who wanted me dead in a place I didn't yet know, with a double agent I didn't trust. And now I had to give my best friends the bad news that they couldn't come along. In other words, it was shaping up to be a typical mission at spy school.